live. Dave, you can walk us in if you want to, and then I'll jump in.
We are okay.
All right. We are live now. All right, let's go.
Are we on?
Yes, sir.
All right. Peace, everybody. What's happening? Welcome to Let's Talk About It. This is Wonder.
I'm Missy.
And I'm Black Ops. How we doing?
All right. We're good. And so we got a lot to talk about today. As you know, since our last show, a lot has happened. So there's a lot to catch up with. We also want to welcome Storm Norm the General. And this is the man that makes the machine go.
Yeah.
And he's going to sit in with us as well. So peace to you, good brother.
Peace. All right.
Black Ops, you got it from here?
I got it from here. Listen,
all right.
And again, big ups to the CEO joining us here. And I was teasing him right before we went on air about his Steelers color. So I got some extra love for him tonight. But good to see you. Missy Wonder, as always, my castmates. Big up to Deandre. We couldn't be here tonight. And of course, he's always in our thoughts and in our hearts as he's joined our team and done a phenomenal job. Filling in and then taking his position with the team. But let's move on, man. Listen, we got on a little late, so I think it's best if we just dive right into what's going on. And first, as I always do, it's important to me, is just to check on everybody. And I'll start with the CEO since he's the boss. So, Norm, what's going on, man?
Man, listen.
I'm
healthy, so I'm not complaining about nothing. Little distraught with all the madness going on, you know, top of the madness. We already had madness with the coronavirus epidemic. Now, this situation, we're dealing with now. So, but I'm all right. I'm good.
Good. Tell the missus we all say hello to.
How y'all doing? I'm good. I mean, you know, everybody this week, as Norm has said, has been stressful. Like this whole year, right? Like 2020 been a year, right? It's like
crazy.
It's been a whole year crazy. And it ain't even been half. It's not even half over, you know? So, everybody's just like taking a deep breath and, you know, just trying to process what's been going on, you know? I was out in your way of Wonder Tuesday. I was out in Newark and was working, you know, but I had my big staging project on Tuesday and I was really happy. I was happy to get that done, but I was like, you know what, Newark is I know we're gonna dig into this a little bit more, but Newark was one of the cities, and you know, Newark is known as a Black city. It is one of the cities that, like, all the protests were pretty peaceful. You know, I have my own theory about it, and we can dive into that. But it's just, you know, my thing. Well, we'll dive into it. But you know, I was happy to be out there, and I was like, big ups to Brick City. You know, big ups to Jersey, and let's get into this.
Yeah.
Right. All right. And as always, we appreciate your thoughts on that. And it's trying times. We're going to get into this. And Newark does have a history with riots, and it actually trickled over into the Queen City. And in its historical context, Newark is definitely one of those cities that can speak to unrest for change. So, like you said, big up to Newark. And in this version of protests, that they are again at the forefront and are the example of how to have peaceful protests, which is applauded.
Right. It's like they kept it peaceful, you know, peaceful with a purpose, you know.
Right.
And mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you. And Wonder, what's going on? How we been?
Man, just working and just been busy, man. I've had a lot of Zoom meetings with some young brothers from our temple, and then some who are not wanting to talk because they're frustrated about what's going on. And so myself, along with two other co-hosts, we've been having these Zoom chats and doing some networking, and we're compiling like a database of some takeaways and just some applicable, you know, items that we can use in our day-to-day lives. So I've been pretty much consumed with that, you know, it just kind of crept up on me. So that's really it, aside from, you know, just the day-to-day stuff, still working, you know, from home and going in the office every so often. But yeah, but I too want to get into this protest because I too have a thought about some of these protests as well. And as you all know, you know, we've been inundated with, you know, these protests and what's going on. And so, yeah, it's a lot to talk about.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, it's as we were saying before we came on air, Rome is burning for sure. And history will look back on the summer of 20, like the summer of 68. And when you really go back and look at these markers in American history, 1968, the summer of 68 was tumultuous. And 2020 in the same breath, and unfortunately, a young man had to lose his life in order for a movement to be started. But I'll look at him as a patriot for us and our movement. He'll never be forgotten, and he will be forever remembered in our history books. Like his daughter said, my daddy changed the world, and he is.
Because yes.
His voice, his seed has gone worldwide with that. Yes. But before we jump too far in that, I do get the, I guess I'll use the word anchor here, and I'll use a light. So I'll take my 2 minutes to anchor with air quotes. Listen, I gotta punch Drew Brees in the face real quick.
Oh my God,
right. Listen, and we're all from Plainfield, and Malcolm Jenkins is from Piscataway, and I'm glad that he was a little close to the West End as he came up a little bit, because you know it's on that side of the town.
That part of Piscataway, right?
And he absolutely let Drew Brees have it, and Drew Brees actually missed the mark. And it's almost like that escape that the majority would want to move to. And like I posted on my page, you know, you have good and bad in all races, et cetera, et cetera. However, a lot of the injustices have been perpetrated against our people, specifically Black and Brown. And Drew Brees knows nothing about that struggle. I don't care how many touchdowns you throw. I don't care how many Super Bowl trophies you hoist. Your experience with the other players that look like us will never be his actual experience.
Right. Ever.
So empathy should have took hold, and he should have known what to say and when to say it and when to shut up. And this was clearly a time for him to shut up. And he'll never recover from that. And I don't care. Listen, it's a sport. And at the end of the day, a ball gets tossed back and forth. But Mr. Floyd's life is not a sport. The Black struggle is not a sport. To some, it may be. But for Drew Brees to have the platform that he has, the voice that he has, he should have took a page from Aaron Rodgers, who simply said, yes, there's a problem. And he didn't.
Definitely. Like, when I saw that about Drew Brees, I was like, damn it, Drew. Like, really? Damn it, Drew. Because the thing is, like, you rep a city, and Drew Brees, his majority of his career, if not all of his career, has been in New Orleans. New Orleans is also a Black city, you know?
Yes.
It's like, how could you be so tone deaf? You know, how could you be so blind unless you are deliberately trying to do this? And as Malcolm Jenkins said, as LeBron James said, you are part of the problem.
Yes.
You're part of the problem because you're refusing to see what's, I don't even want to say like what's smack dab in front of your face, because maybe it's not in front of your face, but you're refusing to see what's around you. And because you play in the NFL, right, which is, you know, American sports is dominated by African Americans, again, and you play in an African American city, you know, you saw what happened during Katrina. You know, it's Black people in that city. How could you be so thoughtless, so, so insensitive, so callous. You know, that's what I didn't get. And that really was disappointing.
Yeah. And again, the apology came after the fact.
It's kind of like when you catch your kids,
the grandkids doing something, they get away with it. They're like, oh, my car. But when they get caught, then they're like, oh, I didn't really mean to do that. Well, right, yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I'm sorry.
Get it. And I don't know. And Norman, wonder if you want to offer up anything, by all means, go ahead. But I just had to get that piece out about Drew Brees, because I love football. I do.
Me too. And I like Drew Brees. You know, I used to, but not no more. You're done. Yeah. I'm done.
I read his apology and all of that. And it's like, okay, you know, to me, it was empty to me. You know what I'm saying? Because you know the time and the period, what we're dealing with right now. And it was very insensitive.
Yeah.
For one, you know, and then two, it's just another example that they just don't get it. Some people, right. They just don't get it, man. I mean, I don't know what more can I say. It's just like, come on, man. Y'all still, after all of this that we're experiencing, you still...
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how all sports actually rose up to say, hey, listen, Drew, bag. That was a bad call. That was a bad call.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll never recover from this, ever. So, and not that I'll lose a whole lot of sleep over it either, but you know, it is what it is.
I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory in terms of, you know, him just being kind of tone deaf to everything that's going on. I wasn't surprised. He's been known to be a Trump supporter, so I wasn't surprised. And he missed the point, you know, he missed the entire point. No one is protesting the flag.
No one's even
protesting the nation's song or whatever it is, the national anthem. Nobody's even protesting that. They're just taking that opportunity to, you know, protest police brutality. And that was it, you know. And once again, you know, people get caught up, and some of us have even gotten caught up with, because, you know, some of us feel some kind of way about, you know, either the national anthem or the flag, and you know, and so be it, that's okay. But he wasn't protesting either one of those things. And, you know, it's almost like it goes in one ear and out the other. You know, he was actually consulted by a veteran, a special forces veteran,
who
told him to do it that way.
Right.
So, yeah.
And you know what, Norm, to just you know, piggyback on what you said, it's like it goes in one ear and out the other. And you know what, people are tired. That's where these protests are coming from, because you know what, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. Yeah. Like, really? Yeah. You're not stupid. You know,
willfully ignorant,
and it's like, you know what? We're tired. How many times do you have to say, I'm tired, you know? Or how many times do you have to explain it? It's like, I'm done explaining. I'm exhausted from explaining. So this is people's reaction, you know, to that. You know, if you're not going to do anything, if you're not going to be a part of the solution, you know, then you're a part of the problem.
Absolutely.
And that's where we're at right now. It's like a line has been drawn in the sand. I'm going to say this. So, you know, my industry is design. And Tuesday was Blackout Tuesday. And I got to be honest with you, I was working, setting up my apartment. But I was really surprised by how many companies were like on Blackout Tuesday. Like my design centers were, you know, like people that I never even would have thought would have put something up there were putting things up there, you know, Blackout Tuesday, like Architectural Digest, you know, like that's a mainstream media, you know, publication. That's Hearst publication, you know, publications. That's big, man. And it was just, it was encouraging in some ways. We'll see how everything plays out. But the support that was shown, I have to tell you, I was encouraged by it, and I was a little bit surprised. You know, actually, I was very surprised. You know, I was expecting just us to be like Blackout Tuesday. You know,
listen.
But I was like, what?
As we always say, let's talk about it, and we have to be, or I will, even if I have to stand on an island by myself in part. But there were quite a few white people out there too during this protest who stepped up and whose faces were bloody, whose heads were bloody, who held up signs, and it has to be acknowledged because it has to affect the fabric and the faces with an S of this country that change is needed. And if it stays in one community, it will fall on deaf ears. So I'm glad that all faces have gotten involved, not just faces within the United States, but the world over. Mm-hmm. So again, I hope this brings about change that it should. So, but I wanna, and because I'm a ex-military guy, I have to get a little bit into leadership as we transition. This is what we call a mechanical transition right here. Okay. Next, I wanna talk about leadership and Donald Trump during this time of crisis, right? Mm-hmm. So he tried to compare himself to Winston Churchill. And if you really study World War II and how Hitler tried to take Blitzkrieg into England and how Winston Churchill waited for his opportunity to exercise a phenomenal leadership and defending and ultimately helping to defeat the Nazis, how Trump and his administration even remotely goes to compare themselves to that moment in time baffles me. There hasn't been a single US president that's ever gone to a bunker. Listen, if you're a leader.
No, I think didn't Bush went during 9/11 though, but that was different, you know?
Listen,
that was a real threat.
That's what I'm saying. That was different because that was for real, right? That was. Right.
Yeah, my thing is, if you're a leader, then you lead. You step out in front, even if that means dying. You step out in front and say, hey, I'm right here with you. But he didn't do that. He retreated. And then not only did he retreat, he said, I was inspecting my bunker. So I started calling him Bunker Trump. He'll always be known as Bunker Trump to me. And with that said, right, of all the times that he's had in these past 3 years to do an inspection, why that particular day, right? That particular moment. Oh, the nation's burning down. Let me check my bunker. I want to make sure
and right by the White House too, they were having, you know, a lot of protests, you know, and some of them were getting a little bit, you know, I don't want to say violent, but it was getting a little unruly. Let's put it like that, you know? That was crazy. And you know what? Even Giuliani, and you know, Giuliani did not have a friend in Jesus on September 10th, you know? But September 11th, he was out there. I don't even know if this guy slept. Like every day he was out there all day, you know? So it's like, you got it, you know, he was out there facing it, you know? And you were like, all right, I don't really like this guy, but you got to give him credit. You know, he out there on the front lines.
Right.
This guy can't, you know, he not built like that.
No, and he had, listen, and right, and you got to take your wife and your son to do an inspection on a bunker at 2 a.m. in the morning. Like, no. Come on, man. Come on, like for me, whenever I deploy, and anyone who's watching this that has ever deployed with me, and I, like Rich Mack, especially the special operation days, I always make sure I was the first one on the plane, going there, first one off the plane in theater, and last one to take it down or rack out, as we say, when we got into theater. You should always lead by example. Always. That's what leaders do. You don't talk about it. You don't put it on a chalkboard and say, this is what I would have done. You put your boots on the ground and you make it happen.
But you know what was worse?
What's that?
What was worse was photo op in front of the church.
Yeah. Oh.
That was worse.
So bad that one of his aides in his administration said, that's it, I had enough. And he quit. He resigned.
What?
Did y'all read about that?
Yeah.
No, I didn't read about that. I got to catch up on that. Yeah. Yeah, you know, that was crazy.
There's a thing going on now where people, they're showing, it's like a movement. It's like a trend where people are taking their Trump 2020 stickers and pulling them off their car. They're like, it's a trend that's going on.
Yeah, because that was terrible with the church. And even the, I think it was a, was it Episcopalian bishop or something that had spoke out about using their church like that? Like, basically, you're using the church as a prop.
I didn't catch that. Really? That's what happened?
Yeah, like the, so you know, the Episcopalian church is, you know, kind of set up like the Roman, you know, Roman Catholic church, like there's hierarchies, you know.
Right.
And so the bishop, whoever the bishop was for like that area, you know, really like renounced it and said, you know what, why are you using our church as a prop? Because literally they cleared those people out with tear gas and rubber bullets so he could walk across the street and stand there with the Bible. He didn't even say anything. Like, that's messed up, man. Yeah. That's messed up. It's like,
yeah,
you know, protesting is as American as apple pie. Y'all know, like, this country was built on rebellion, you know? Mm-hmm. It was built on that.
The Revolutionary War, yep.
Exactly. It was built on that. And the First Amendment does protect our right to gather, you know, peacefully. So if you have people out there, and they said it was a peaceful gathering, but then the military came out and they started dispersing them with tear gas and rubber bullets. Like, who does that? Who does that? Who, what president does that to their own citizens?
Trump.
Yeah, like, these are your own citizens, man. What are you doing?
Right, and it's all ego-based.
Yeah. Right.
And that's why the Marine General, the Secretary of Defense at Mad Dog, I'll call him.
Mattis? Oh, yeah. Mattis, you see that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He finally came out and kind of like what you were alluding to, Wonder, the staffer, he said, listen, enough is enough. And even the current Secretary of Defense came up and he broke ranks with Trump and said, listen, I didn't know it was going to be a photo op.
Here's what I
applaud. Whether he knew in part or not, he went on national TV and said, not cool. And where this isn't a dictatorship. Like, this isn't Russia, even though they have their so-called president, but we know how that goes. This isn't South Korea, North Korea.
North Korea or China. China for that matter.
Right. And Trump so bad wants to will power like that. And it's, you know, there have been a lot of folks who have died going back to the Revolutionary War who fought to oppose tyranny like that, to include yours truly, right? And it's not like I'm one of the guys who just sat behind a desk. My ass was in the fray.
This person, wondered, they were the bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington.
Okay.
You know, so that's like, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody kind of, you know, in charge, you know.
Right.
He looks like a clown, though, you know. I don't know, man. It's like the lack of leadership. It's not even surprising. It was expected, right? Didn't you expect him to retreat like a coward? When we do need a leader. I feel like this country is leaderless right now, you know, between the COVID-19 and then what's going on now with the George Floyd. And it's like he thrives on division, just like what Mattis said. He thrives on division. He's not going to bring the country together. His whole thing is to divide us. And it's really sad. And we look pathetic. Did you see what Justin Trudeau, did you see him on the news? They had asked him and he couldn't even put the words together on how he felt about the United States right now.
Yeah, he was just like, I have no words. I don't know what to say.
He was speechless. He was speechless for like 20 seconds. he could, it's like he started to say, like, well, he couldn't say anything. He was speechless. That's really sad.
Mike, if you remember, like, the shock and all, when Mike Tyson got knocked out, everybody was like, what the hell is going on? It stopped the world for a minute. When you think about the United States and how we look like a Trudeau, he's looking at the United States like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
Like, what? You have got to be kidding me. And in the eyes of the world, man, it is incredible. And you're right, we do need that steady leadership, and we're void of that. And when you think about his entire cabinet, I really think there's about five of them that sit in that Oval Office, and they literally say, okay, yeah, let's go do this. And that's it.
But you know what? But they said, though, the thing with the photo op at the church, that it was a heated discussion about it. And, like, you know, half of them were like, no, that's not a good idea. And the other half was like, no, yeah, let's do whatever. You know, I mean, I don't even know what the words would be besides no. What else? How else would you even begin to justify that? But they said it was a heated discussion about it. And all of them did not agree with it. And you could see with the people that went with him, it wasn't a lot of people. And I don't even think Pence wasn't even there. You know, I don't think he was. But I just remember seeing a picture of him. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's crazy. I hope that people start to wake up to this clown, you know?
Yeah, he's fallen behind even more. As far as the points and the distance with Joe Biden. And when you think about it's really threefold, and you capture two, and Mr. Floyd and the pandemic, but the tertiary piece to that is the economy.
Yeah, yeah.
Historic unemployment, greater than the Great Depression. And, you know, you would think a leader would say, let me address these and let's try and heal the nation, like the big deal, like the Marshall Plan, like the Deming Plan. And those who know history know exactly what those are. The rebuilding of the United States after the Depression, the rebuilding of Germany, and the rebuilding of Japan. And he's offered up nothing of the sort with that. And in fact, he tries to point elsewhere, and he abdicates leadership. And I knew he was a horrible abdicator when the pandemic initially broke out, and he appointed Mike Pence as the point man. It's like, no, he is the vice president. You are the president of the United States, and this is going to be a situation where it grips your country. You don't abdicate at that moment.
Yeah, no, the way he conceded the podium to Mike Pence, I'm like, what president would do that? You know, like, you don't do that. It was almost like he was a supporting player in this whole, you know, these daily coronavirus things. And then when he did talk, you know, he's like, he's like the disinfectant. It's like, it's not funny, but it's like, he's like a buffoon.
I hope I live long enough to see the history books when his administration is gone, and they really write about it, and all the fallout happens, and all the tentacles can go out and see just how bad he messed up. And I would love to read some of that just to see just how bad he messed it up. I really would. It's like the blind leading the blind with something. Like, even Lindsey Graham tried to remotely come to his defense today. I was like, Graham, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, dude? Like, what is wrong with you?
Here's the craziness, though, bro. It's like, some of us is coming to his defense, which bothers me.
Really?
Like, Candace Owens, man, she just came out with another statement, and I'm like, did you really just come out with this? Did y'all see it?
No, I try to ignore
her. Yeah, I read some of it. I read some of the transcript.
Hold up. Oh, okay. Here it is right here. She said, George Floyd was not an amazing person.
Oh, my God.
So, and then she goes on to say her reasoning and why are, you know, people giving him this and that. And then some people even had the gall enough to say, he's not deserving of the type of memorial, this type of memorial service and all. It was crazy. And this was some of us.
Yeah. I was, I've gotten a few things. I tell you, my Instagram, what do they call it? Your, the DMs and the messenger and all that, man, I've gotten so much stuff. And at the end of the day, I always say this, he was a human being. He was a human being.
It doesn't, right. He was a human being. It doesn't, it George Floyd could have been anybody, right?
Right. Everyone has a past.
Right.
Everyone has something that they don't want the public to know about. Everyone has a cross to bear. But if we start to move away from humanity, we are lost as a species. We are lost as a species.
And you know what? It doesn't matter what kind of human, like, I don't care what that guy was doing. Honestly, I don't care if he had 200 pounds of cocaine in his car and JonBenet Ramsey in the back seat. I don't care. He didn't deserve to die like that. That's like, we literally are watching this man die on tape. And there's people that are indifferent. There's bystanders that are saying, look, just get off him. He's not, you can hear them saying, he's not even moving. He's not responding. And you still feel a need to restrain him like that?
Right.
Like, you wouldn't do that to a dog.
No, not just restrain them, right? The comfort and ease at which the police officer had his hand in his pocket, shaped on top of his head, looking around saying, let me exercise this badge, this privilege. Let me exercise how I feel inside. Let me demean this man and let me horrible.
What's more disturbing is it turns out the $20 was not counterfeit.
It wasn't. That's what I heard.
The $20 was not counterfeit. That's one thing. Two, they lied and said that there was a struggle. But when you look at the videotape, there wasn't a struggle. Right. The bystanders said there wasn't a struggle.
Right.
So the officers lied.
Right.
And the now also what needs to be looked at, that store owner, I'm not saying to trash the dude, but you know, what does it cost to get a marker to mark a the high dollar bills to see if it's counterfeit?
Right.
Like what? And here's the thing. I was speaking to a sister who worked, she was a manager for a bank for 20 years. And I asked her, I said, what's the protocol? I put it on my Facebook. I said, what is the protocol? Do you call the cops? She said, look, we are a bank. She said, you know how many counterfeit bills we get? She said, we can't even get anybody involved until there's a certain amount, until it compiles.
Right.
Because you don't have proof how people, I came across a counterfeit bill.
How could you, right?
You don't know where
you
got it.
You don't know where they got it from.
Who gave it to you?
Right.
There's funny money all over the place.
Exactly. And he worked at a nightclub. So that could have came from anywhere. He probably didn't pay cash.
Yep, and one of the listeners says it was only $20 anyway.
Right, exactly. Good point.
So,
good point.
Shout out to Sarah on the check-in. Y'all got a lot of people.
Oh, Sarah Sturdivant. Hey, yes. Sarah.
Rasul. Oh. Michelle Justice. James Whitfield.
Prince Rasul, I said, what's up?
just all of them making good, valid points. Dion. Just a lot of people on the check-in, man, but I look at it like this, and I thought about it with the other cops. If Wanda, Ellen, and Sean was sitting in the car, right, and I went inside the bank, and I robbed that daggone bank, all of y'all going down when I get back in the car. If all of us is getting locked up, regardless whether y'all do it or not, y'all getting locked up. Y'all accomplices.
Right.
You were sitting in the car.
Right. Okay.
You know, until you explain to the police later
what's
going on, whatever case, you're still getting locked up. You're getting arrested. So when I look at these other cops that I call them accomplices, because there was accomplices because they sat there and they watched it, and they could have changed the whole dynamics of what happened.
Yeah.
If they just would have pulled that officer off his
name. Right. Right. But you know what? I was reading because they charged those other officers. So here's the deal. Here's where it starts to get insidious, right? Here's the blue wall of silence. That cop was 44, okay? The Derek guy, what's his name? Derek?
Charlton.
Yeah. He was, I'm going to say, for lack of a better word, he was the senior officer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Three cops, two of them, one of them had just started.
Had even been there a year. Yeah,
and then the other one had only been there a couple of years. But this is where it gets insidious. They were probably afraid to say something to him. You know what I mean? Like they weren't, you know, they weren't senior enough to say something to him. They're following his lead, you know? And that's how it perpetuates itself, and that's how it continues to carry on. You're grooming them for, you know, it, again, to be a part of this, you know, fraternity, right? Those young cops, especially the one cop, he had been there less than a year. You think he's going to stand up to this guy? He's not going to do that. And he two of them were real young. I'm not excusing their behavior. I'm not, but I'm just showing how it just perpetuated itself. You know,
there were a lot of things at play. And also just to highlight, I'm looking at what one of the listeners said, and this came out that they worked together for a year. Now it's not substantiated that they knew each other,
right,
but there was a lack where they worked together at the same club. Floyd worked inside and the officer who killed him worked outside.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And the club owner said somebody ran to him, one of his workers, and said, "Hey, that looks like George." And he said he couldn't really tell, but he noticed the cop. He said, "Hey, that's so-and-so." And so then when he looked, he said, "That's George." And you know what the club owner said? He said, "I wish George had said, 'Hey man, you know me. We work together at the so-and-so club.'"
Right. You know what, man? It's like
So that does let me know that maybe they did know each other. That's what the club owner said. The club owner said that.
It's possible. I want to get back to those other officers real quick, man, because one of them did get to the point to where they said, well, don't you think we should turn them over? Should we turn them over now?
Yeah.
So that means you knew that his life was in danger.
Oh, yeah. They knew that.
You knew that there was a risk that he could possibly lose his life by saying that. So this is why I'm saying, like, I'm glad. I think they're going to charge him all with the same charge, if I'm not mistaken. And all of them should get the same charge. It's just my opinion.
I think the cop that actually did the kneeling has a higher charge, and the others have a little bit of a lower charge.
It's second degree aiding and abetting.
Exactly. But you could see in the video, and I almost hate even referencing the video because it's very hard to watch. You can see where he loses consciousness. Like, you can see it. It's like, at that point, and not only that, you had him on the ground and he had handcuffs on.
Oh,
like, what did you think he was going to do?
Can I point something out? Mm-hmm. There's a video that someone sent me, and I'll try and get it out, where they said, "Pay close attention to the ambulance and the paramedics."
Right.
They were not paramedics.
They were cops.
They were cops. There was not a paramedic. Was it you? Black Ops that sent that to me? Somebody sent that to me.
Yeah, I think it was me.
And he said, "Watch closely." They pull up, two cops get out, hoist them on the gurney, put them in, get in the ambulance, and drive off. Mm. And I said, "Wow, look at that. Isn't that something?"
Mm. Yeah. The whole thing just stinks, man. Like, they all stink, right? You know, like the whole thing, and that's what this is about. It's like, we're tired. Like, why is it that we're treated differently. And again, it doesn't matter what he did. You have somebody like a Dylann Roof that walks into a church, sits down, prays with them, and kills 9 people. And somehow, you are, and then he goes on the run, okay? Somehow, you are able to capture this guy and arrest him and not put a scratch on his body. Like, really? But you can't come to a little, you know, some kind of, I don't even know what the thing was that they called in, but you know, you're at a little store here. You guys can't handle this without somebody dying. It's the same thing like Eric Garner, but you couldn't handle him with, you know, selling loose cigarettes outside of a bodega. It had to end like this.
Not like, to mention those chokeholds. That chokehold was illegal. Like,
right, it's the depravity of it. That's what you don't. That's what you're not getting. You know, it's the depravity of it, and it constantly. You don't see videos like this of white guys. No. We don't see those videos.
Well, it goes back to the whole thing about Black Lives Matter. When, mm-hmm. If you don't value a black life,
exactly.
When you get into a situation like that, and especially if you're a racist and you don't value a black life, you're not going to care. You're not going to see it as somebody I got to worry about if I hurt them or not, or somebody I got to worry about if I killed them or not, because you don't care because you don't value that life. With Dylann Roof, they see Dylann as one of them.
Yeah, that's somebody's son. Right, that's what they see. They see their son. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. They don't see George Floyd or anybody else as, this is somebody's child. This is somebody's father. This is somebody's, you know, brother. This is a human being.
But see, with racism,
they have to make that chokehold illegal. It has to be a federal statute. It can't be state to state. That's the only way you're going to mitigate that. You have to make it so that every police officer knows, if I remotely use this chokehold, I'm done. Until that happens, and you just leave it at the state level, it's going to happen again. It has to be a federal statute.
Yeah. But you know what, Black Ops? I was going to say this. It's bigger than the police. Like, this is an entire system. Because what about the differences between the autopsy report? You know, the medical examiner,
the gentleman they got to do the second one, he is no joke. That's the guy.
Yeah. I know him. Yeah, right. I know who he is. Michael Baden, his name is. But how about the difference between what the county medical examiner found and an independent medical examiner found? Like, are y'all all in cahoots here? Yeah.
Well, that was like the prosecutor.
I think you are.
Mm-hmm. For that, and then the state attorney jumping in. There's attorney general. That's the same thing. So you have to get away from home cooking for things to really be explored. And that's what happened. So I'm glad. And I'm glad that the folks who got involved are getting to the root of it. Again, I look for federal change with police tactics, but the narrative of injustices for us as a people, minorities, brown and black, and other minorities, it has to be addressed. And I'm glad it's on the forefront of the nation's conscience. It's just sad that it came at the expense, again, by one of us.
I agree. Shout out to James Whitfield. He said, listen, we need new legislation that clearly says any police officers or law enforcement kill any unarmed Americans, cops will be charged and convicted of murder. Hey, man, I'm with you on that. We need.
I was also to that point, what Brother James said, you know, also when you look at this, when you look at the psyche of these races, you know, years ago, you can go online and you can read about social outbursts where it took place in the Jim Crow era. And when you read how the newspaper depicts black people, you would swear it was some wild animal that got loose from the zoo. This narrative and this thought in the psyche is still the same. This is why those of us who have children, especially sons, we have to remind them, even in their innocence, that, listen, you're young, you know, in my eyes, you're a child, But in the eyes of the dominant society, the predominantly society, or the dominant society, you don't look like a child. You look like a menace to them because they have this preconceived notion. And this is why, and so there's cowardice that's coupled with racism. So if you're a racist and you're a coward, that's a toxic mix. Mm. And so that's why you have these trigger happy knee-jerk reactions from these cowards. You notice though, Black cops, now don't get me wrong, Black cops can rough up the brothers too, but they don't take it that far. And even with us, as fellow Black people, they don't take it that far.
And
they definitely don't handle white people that way. It's only white cops who break Black people. Well, I broke them. You know, out of sheer cowardice and fear. There's nothing tough or hardcore about that. It's out of fear that they overreact.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely out of fear. It's not even I think. It's definitely out of fear. And you know what? When you look at what the background is, like for a policeman, I was looking at these young cops, like really, there wasn't anything so super special about them. You know, it's like, what kind of training do these cops have? You know, what kind of psychological exams do they have to take? You know, if you're that afraid of people, then maybe you don't need to be a cop. You know, maybe this is just not, maybe that's just not the profession for you, you know?
Like let me say this.
People never say this kind of stuff about firefighters, you know what I'm saying?
Right, but what happens is a lot of those, well, and I'll say speculation on my part, but I think there's some truth behind it. A lot of those gentlemen and ladies who grow up to become police officers, they were younger, were terrified for whatever reason. And now they feel empowered. I'm going to show you. Officer, overseer. Even Richard Pryor, listen, they always say there's truth in humor. And when you go back, Richard Pryor did a skit. And he was talking about the chokehold. He said they had a chokehold. And Richard Pryor kind of acted it out and he snapped the seller's neck. And he said,
I think he's broke.
I think he's broke. You can break one of them, right? And he goes, he goes right here on page 7. Yep, you can break. But there's truth and humor.
And
you have to remember he did that in the late 70s, and that's coming out of the fire. 60s. And here we are in 2020. Still talking about it. Listen.
The same thing.
Don't hide behind your bag and your gun. I know some great cops. I do. I know some folks on the Fed level, state, correctional officers, great people. But those who use their power in a wrong way outside of protecting and serving should leave the force, period.
No, I agree.
Well, I agree too. I saw a meme, I don't know if Chris Rock said this or not, but it was kind of, you know, it was funny, but always like Chris Rock, it makes you think, you know.
About the good cops.
You know, about the good cops. Like, you don't, you know, an airline doesn't say, hey, you know, most of our pilots are good, only a few of them are bad. You know, like, there's some professions where there should be zero tolerance for, like, everybody need to be good. Like pilots. Like doctors, you know, cops to me should separate. It's the same thing with firefighters.
Well,
you know, like you have to be top notch. You have to be able to handle this job. But the pilot analogy was perfect because nobody wants to hear, no airline is going to say, hey, 95% of our pilots are good. It's just, you know, only 5% of them, you know, we don't really know, you know. Nobody says that.
I mean, listen, the whole vetting process needs to change.
I agree.
When it comes to hiring a police officer.
Yeah.
I know right now, if I got bad, terrible credit, if I got a 200 credit score, I'm not getting me a nice house. I'm just not getting me a nice house.
Right.
So my thing is you got to start vetting these cops down to the T, their history, their background, their upbringing, all of that. You need to
ask
all the right questions.
I agree.
Cops, because like Wonder said early, a lot of it is fear. You know, a lot of it's fear. And then with the white cops, a lot of it's privilege as well. So if you mix the fear thing with the white privilege thing, you know, and then you got a corrupt, sort of corrupt officer, it's going to be chaos. Especially
and
if,
the and community. And a corrupt system.
Yes.
You know, because you're putting them into a system that is corrupt. It's going to take a, it would take a while for that system. Just like, that's why the point I made about that guy was like the senior officer. He is having a huge influence on those younger officers, which is probably one of the reasons they were probably afraid of him. They're probably like, hey man, wait a minute. We didn't learn this in training. What are you doing? They're too new. They're too green, you know, to say, to confront him and say, hey, you need to stop. That's not right. They're not going to do that. They're following his lead. And that's exactly what they did.
Right. And at some point, all of them had their knee on Mr. Floyd.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I agree about the background thing. Like, I think that they should. I think that they should be psychologically tested. I'm sure that they are. But some of them don't seem like they're the brightest, you know, guys out there.
So what do y'all think about, there's two conversations going on. There are people saying this wasn't a racist incident. This was an incident of just bad policing, bad cops.
Okay.
What do y'all feel about that?
Well, I disagree with that.
Yeah, what's the second conversation?
Yeah.
That's the main conversation, that it wasn't, this wasn't a racist incident. This was
so I would ask this question. Uh-huh. I would ask this question. Who's saying that?
Yeah, who's saying that? Because honestly, if this was a white guy, this wouldn't have happened like this. And we all know that. There's no way we would have seen a white guy die like that. I've never seen, of all these tapes, do you ever see white guys?
They're not
only,
like that.
They're only black guys, right?
I asked one person, I said that, and it was in a Facebook commentary. I said, well, how could you say it's not a racist incident? They was like, because one of the cops were black. I said, was it? Were they?
Yeah, but what they don't understand is it's the system.
It's the system.
They become inoculated into the system.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, listen, it's getting to be that time. So I want to give everybody their last little bit there as we get off the air today. But it's just, again, if everyone could just pause for a second and really take a moment to realize that we're at another crucial point in our history as a country. And we need to, and as much as it's going to pain me to say this, we need change from Mr. Floyd's death. It's here, and we have the conscience of America, and we need to use it while it's here, because it's not always going to be here. Tomorrow, it's going to be yesterday's news.
Yeah, we still haven't licked our wounds from the Ahmaud Arbery thing. You just got totally blindsided by this thing in Minneapolis. So, yeah.
Yeah. But no, they're getting theirs because they got them on tape and they use a racial epithet at the end. They have them in custody. Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is we didn't even really talk about this, but I'm just going to make my two cents about the lady in Central Park with the bird watcher.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see how cunning she was?
She lied.
It's an African American. Like, yeah, lady, you know the right code words to use. You know what you were doing was going to bring the police and possibly put this guy's life in danger. So I'm not buying, back to your question, Norm, I'm not buying that it's not racist. It's absolutely racist. But she just co-signed it right then and there.
Yeah. And she said her life was ruined. I was like, well, somebody could have lost it.
And you know what? His could have been taken away.
Exactly.
If you listen to her when she got on the phone, if you had have closed your eyes, you would have thought the man was on her.
Yes,
on her.
Exactly.
She had this frantic cry like he was doing something to her.
And she was all out of breath because she's holding the dog.
She was choking the dog.
So, you know, she's all out of breath. She's getting hysterical. You would have thought she was being attacked. And she was doing all of this herself. She was bringing all of this on herself. And she knew exactly what she was doing because she told him, I'm going to tell them that it's an African-American man. It's like, wow, okay. Really?
So you're cognizant of the circumstance.
Exactly.
You know.
Yes. Exactly. And that's, again, to answer Norm's question, you think it was racist? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely yeah. do. And yeah. and again, she just co-signed every, she just checked every box for everybody.
Yeah.
she did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cameras don't lie. The right. cameras don't lie. So thank God for modern technology, like I put up on my post. Cameras don't lie. But listen.
Okay.
Yep. Norm, you got anything before we close out?
You know what? I'm just going to just play this real quick. I'm not even going to say nothing. This is going to be my closing right here.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm going to play a clip of how this young lady, I call her a young lady, she's an older lady, but she broke down racism. So I'm just going to play this clip. It's like, I think about 59 seconds. And here it is.
Why do we hate?
We hate because we're taught to hate. We hate because we're ignorant. We're the product of ignorant people who have been taught an ignorant thing, which is that there are four or five different races. There are not four or five different races. There's only one race on the face of the earth, and we're all members of that race, the human race. But we have separated people into racists so that some of us can see ourselves as superior to the others. We thought it would work, I guess. It hasn't worked. It has been bad for everyone. But it's time to get over this business. There is no gene for racism. There's no gene for bigotry. You're not born a bigot. You have to learn to be a bigot. Anything you learn, you can unlearn. It's time to unlearn our bigotry. It's time to get over this thing, and we best get over it pretty soon. I'm an educator, and it's my business as an educator to lead people out of ignorance, the ignorance of thinking that you're better or worse than someone else because of the amount of a pigment in your skin. Pigmentation in your skin has nothing to do with intelligence or with your worth as a human being. It's time to get over that.
I'm gonna leave it at that.
Yeah, that's Jane Elliott. She has a study she's been doing for years called the Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes Experiment.
Yeah.
She was on Oprah and some other shows. Yeah, that's a nice breakdown.
Yes, it is.
All right, so.
Nothing more to add to that. She did that perfectly.
Yeah, great, great closeout. Listen, as always, Miss E. Wonder, the CEO, Storm Norm, the super producer who couldn't be here tonight, and the six man Dean Geronimo, as always. We appreciate our viewing audience. We appreciate our commentary that we get to have with you guys. And as always, we look forward to doing our show. So with that said, I'll say good night. Let's talk about it. Take care.
Peace. Peace.
Peace. Y'all be safe.
Thanks. All right.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, so what do we do, Norm?